Hello, everyone, and welcome to Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, just like every week, and I am joined by my co-host, Casey. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? What's new? What's cracking?
I don't know. Did that Amber Alert return any results?
None.
All right, so Michael's gone.
Yeah. I'm going to miss him.
What do we do with the medal?
I mean, probably use it for the vigil, and then you know, give it to his family, right?
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off every order by using the code Would That Be Good. So, also, don't forget to check out our new sponsor at Five Color Combo. You can go to our website on constructivecriticism.com, and there will be a button for you to press right at the top, right next to Oasis Games, where you can go buy their tokens and check out some more awesome content that they host on their website. And also download their application that I will be using every week on Limited Time Only to do our Crack-A-Pack stuff, because that's the app that I used to draft from. It's a sweet app. I use it all the time. I use it probably every other day. So
very cool.
And they do have sweet tokens. I was just looking at them.
Yeah, they are sweet. I'm not too familiar with their offerings, but I have used their app before, and I was a fan of it.
Yeah, so check it out. It's on Android and Apple. So the app, I believe, is just called Drafting Magic. It's actually called Magic Drafter. So check it out. Don't forget that you can support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg and become a patron of the show. We always appreciate everything that we get, and it's starting at $1. Anything that you can do per month is really appreciated. So yeah, and maybe if you guys pay enough money, Michael will come back.
Maybe. He's very demanding, though.
Yeah.
Very.
I'm a little scared. I actually don't know what jokes are appropriate because I don't know if he's alive.
Right.
And yeah, that's scary.
It's tough. I would be very, like, he's, statistically speaking, he's probably fine. Right?
Probably.
Like.
But if he's not, we can't make jokes. He's put us in a precarious situation. Yeah.
Really backed us into a corner here, Michael. Not only did you not show up, but also we can't make fun of you for not showing up
because
you might be dead.
Because if he's dead, then we just look bad.
Then we're big old jerks.
Yeah. Which is sad and bad.
Right.
And that's just...
We are dedicated.
And if you combine those two words, you either get bad or sad.
Right. Yeah, there's no two ways to slice it. Right. But it is dedicated, right? The show must go on.
Yeah.
One of our hosts is MIA, possibly KIA. And we have
what
no
idea. KIA? Killed in action?
Killed in action, yeah.
Wow. This is so morbid.
Where's
Michael to lighten the mood? Where's Michael to lighten the mood? All right, so every week on this podcast, we talk about something that's going to improve you at Magic. And we also like to talk about what we've done to improve at Magic. Hashtag Always Improving is our segment where we talk about what we've done week in and week out to get better and what you can do week in and week out to get better. Because honestly, we believe that if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we believe that wholeheartedly, and we always want to be improving with you guys. So this week, how did you improve in Magic, Casey?
Well,
other than playing Geist of St. Traft in Vintage, which doesn't sound like improving, by the way.
I mean, I crushed both people that I played.
Okay.
I mean, it was mostly just trying to have fun with Magic. We, you know, don't have any PPTQs this week other than an ENA one that I was never going to play in, and then... Don't have any next week either, so trying to keep Magic fresh and fun without really a tournament coming up, because that's something that I've kind of slacked in the past, where if there wasn't anything coming up, I wouldn't really play any Magic. So I've just been focused, but still trying to keep it fun, not really dwelling on trying to test specific matchups or anything.
Sure.
And try to, you know, just improve in other ways.
Yeah, I had a similar week. I brewed a ton. I brewed 3 different ramp decks. I played Modern, I played Standard, I played Legacy, I played Vintage, I played EMA Draft, I played SOI Draft. Like, I played a ton of Magic this week. Like, a lot of Magic. It felt really good. It was really fun. And honestly, like, it felt good to not have a tournament to go to and, like, kind of sit back, relax, and Ulamog people and Sarkhan people, because I've been playing some Sarkhan.
Oh. Is Sarkhan still in Standard?
Yeah.
Oh, the 3 color one.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
The good one.
Yeah, the one from Dragons, exactly.
Yeah, the good one. The one that's great.
Yeah, I acknowledge that it exists. That's as far as you're going to go with me.
yeah, so I have been playing that into Autarkas, and that's fun.
I mean, like, based on a very liberal definition of fun, I could see how that would be true.
No, I did like a kind of like a huge long conversation with somebody with their ramp deck. They were playing blue green ramp, and we had long conversations. It was really fun. I got to talk with him about like my feelings on the deck, how I would build the deck, and different things like that. And you know, it was a good time, and it felt like something that we could probably incorporate into the Patreon and the for our patrons and stuff like that. But it was like a deck, like, you send me a deck list, I'll send you my feedback kind of thing. It was really fun.
Very cool.
But I also got to play blue green ramp with Kiora, and that deck was sweet. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I tried to play that Kiora in the last paper tournament we played in, but I only cast it one time in Austin. Void shattered it like a jerk, so I never actually got to play with it.
Yeah, what a butthead. That Austin.
Yeah.
How do moments like this improve us at Magic? How do we both have this week that's kind of laid back and feel like we did improve at Magic from it?
Because Magic is a game, and it is something that we do for fun. Something that, you know, neither of us have made any sort of real lifetime profit in Magic other than enjoyment out of it. Yeah. So if it starts to feel too much like a grind, it's something you don't want to do anymore. So being able to take this time, and instead of treating it as a vacation from Magic, like treating it as a vacation in Magic.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like when you think about this podcast, for example, and I feel like I do a lot to not make it feel like a job. I feel like I'm like very about not making you feel like I'm giving you a job to do.
Sure.
And I think that when we have to play Magic for the podcast, it does start to feel like a job playing Magic.
Yeah, or just like this PBTQ system, like sometimes you just have to play a lot of Magic.
Yeah.
If you want to maximize your chances of going to Pro Tours and things,
right,
you just play a lot of Magic. So it can start to feel like a grind, and not in a good way. So being able to, instead of taking 3 weeks off from playing any Magic and just getting rusty and terrible, we're just, you know, going in a different way, having some fun while still playing Magic and not letting it feel like our job.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things that go into the lifestyle. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Right. I mean, that's a good way to put it. I mean, we're not the chaps from the East Coast with the yellow and blue shirts that are always crushing these SCGs where it is their job. We have real jobs we have to do between these podcasts and between these tournaments. And so, you know, just not feeling like we have a second job playing Magic is really nice.
Right.
That's something that you and I have both been guilty of before.
That's true. Let's give out a Magic card. I want to talk about a card very specifically. I want to talk about... Oh, this is not the right deck list. I meant to pull up this. I wanted to talk about the way that Infect works. We talk about the deck a lot, and I want to give out some cards for Infect. I'm actually going to give out Might of Old Carosa. We're going to make that the card of the week. To be eligible for card of the week, you just have to be a $3 or more patron of the show, and it makes you eligible, and we can ship you some sweet magical cards every time we get the chance. This week, they're going to go to patron of the show, Austin B. So, Austin, shoot me a message, and I'll ship you some cards. So I want to talk about the way that this deck is set up. By the way, if you guys want to look at a sweet list, if you look at the second place deck from Andrew Jessup, it's almost... Last time we talked about Modern, I said I like every card in the 75, and this is the same 75. Well, the same 60. I don't know if he has the same sideboard, but he does have the same main board as that deck that I said I loved the list for Infect so much.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. The only thing that... Some tech that I saw this weekend, Thing in the Ice in the sideboard for the creature matchups... Because you cast a lot of spells in this deck.
Sure.
And I think that's sweet, and I would want to try it. But I think that, yeah, this deck is really well-tuned. Every card has a role. There's nothing that's in there just for its own sake. It's a well-oiled machine, and I have nothing but respect for all the work they put in to get this deck where it is.
Yeah, I think this 60 specifically is... It's crazy. Like, the one of Distortion Strike... I think that's two Twisted Image, right? Yeah, two Twisted Image. Like, the deck is a thing of beauty, and it did very well this week. And I think that it takes a different mindset than the mindset that I have in Magic to see things like this deck, right? Like, to play deck in to play a deck at this angle.
Yeah.
Also, can I just say how much I love the Viridian Corruptor? I've seen it in camera a few times where it, like, won them the game because they had that extra infect creature.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It actually basically doesn't matter what it is. The fact that it's a naturalize is kind of whatever, right?
Right.
Who cares? But it's a reasonable infect creature. It's a Grey Ogre, so it survives Night of Souls Betrayal, right?
Right.
And it can just do stuff for you. It can make things happen in your life. And just having that, you know,
a surplus?
Yeah, the 13th infect creature, basically. Like, where you... It increases the number of hands you can keep. It just does things
and
for
it's,
you.
It's good in a lot of decks. And yeah. It also kills Night of Souls Betrayal, by the way.
Sure.
So, I mean, it does a lot. And I think that seeing people cast their spells in different ways, right? Like, people using their spells, like... I saw a play where somebody actually saved their Mind of Old Krosa as a pump spell to protect their Viridian Corruptor from Lightning Bolt.
Nice.
And it was like, you got to do what you got to do. And that's why I wanted to make Mind of Old Krosa the card of the week. Because you think one thing about the card.
That one's tricky. It is. Like, it really, because it looks like it's a sorcery, right? It's a one mana +4/+4 sorcery. Because that's how most people play it.
Yeah.
But no, this card has modes.
It's a modal card.
Yeah.
And,
which is sweet.
Yeah, those cards are always great. So thank you so much to Austin for being a patron, and we look forward to sending you my novel to Krosa. Let's get into this. So this week we're doing Power Rankings for Modern. We're going to be going over the decks. The way the decks get points is based upon their finish. So they get 6 points for first, 5 for second.
4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16, and 1 for a top 32 when applicable.
And we just did the open this week, right?
Right.
Yeah. So coming in with 4 points, so that's, I assume that it was just a top 4, right?
No, I think it was 2 top 16s.
Oh, okay. Is Kiki Cord. Deck is a deck of cards.
Yep. Of all the decks in Modern, this is one of them. No, I don't know. This deck is almost definitely better than I give it credit for, because it's always around, right? It's always somewhere in the power rankings. Somebody's top 32s with it every single time we look at Modern.
That's
it's
true.
It's not always, you know, in the top 5, but it's always around.
I think that when the format is more loving of the cards in this deck, like, I do think that this deck plays a different grind game than
Abzan Company.
We got some feedback that I talk a lot of trash on this deck. And I do. I actually think this deck is worse in a lot of facets than the other deck. But I do think that there are days and weeks where you would probably rather be playing the Resto Eternal Witness deck than the non-Resto deck, right?
Yeah. And I mean, this deck does have lines, and there's things that you can make happen for yourself with this deck that you just don't really have access to in a deck like Abzan Company. The top end of the deck, like, your cards on average are a little bit better.
No, that's true. That's true. I do think that Abzan Company can play a long game just like this deck can.
It can. I just mean they're different. Like, when you're in a top deck war, I think that you're probably better off playing this deck because the individual cards are a little bit better.
I think that's true. I think this deck is probably a little bit better against Jund.
Right. I mean, Restoration Angel is a heck of a magic card against Jund.
Yeah. Grixis Delver comes in with 6 points. That's all of its points.
Yep. Just from Kevin Jones taking it to the house.
Throwing it down.
Yeah.
This deck is fine. I don't have any problems with this deck that I can think of. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Grixis Delver? I think it's always interesting the way these decks are built and constructed and the way that they all look so different. You know, I've heard people saying that playing Thought Scour is crazy, which seems crazy because I don't know how else you're casting any of your spells.
Right. For me, I get stuck in a vicious cycle with this deck where I think Thought Scour is like a pretty bad magic card, but you can never cast Grimmaw Gangler and Tassigar if you're not playing Thought Scours, if you can't cast them early. And then you're just stuck in this vicious loop where if I'm not playing these cards, what's the point of playing Grixis? And if I am playing these cards, I have to play Thought Scour, which is a terrible magic card. So that's why I could never get behind this deck. But I think that the way that he
played... This deck has some fun ofs.
It does. I think the way that he played this deck was really interesting, and it's very different from how I've ever played this deck. In terms of...
What do you mean?
post board, it was basically just a control deck. I'm pretty sure he was boarding his Delvers out in a lot of matchups and just playing Grixis control post board.
Into Ancestral Vision's control?
Right.
Okay.
Which is something that I can get behind, you know, because Delver is just like, when you're doing it with Delver, you're really doing it, but when you're not, it's pretty bad.
Sure.
So I could see, like, being able to have access to that. It's very similar to the way that Vintage Delver is played by a lot of people, which is cool. I mean, ultimately, it lets you pull pretty far ahead in the control mirrors, the blue mirrors, because you top deck so many fewer lands than your opponent, and your spells are just a little bit more efficient. You're not playing the big haymakers that really, at the end of the day, don't matter that much, like Celestial Colonnade isn't, you know, it still gets terminated just like anything else.
I like Grixis a lot in this format. I'm not a fan of Delver in the deck. Honestly, would the deck be that much worse if they were just young Pyromancers?
Probably. I mean, one mana is so much less than two. Just being able to play it and be done
with it
and try to ride it out and just Delver your opponents. It's much harder to Pyro your opponent than Delver your opponent.
Sure.
I think. Especially if they're going to start taking it to you right away. You really can't afford to take turn two off, and then you're on a turn 100 before you can play a threat, which is not really how this hyper-efficient answers and threats deck likes to play.
Sure. Okay. Any additional thoughts on this one?
No, I think it's fine. I'm very surprised whenever this deck does well, but I think that it's fine.
I'm not surprised when it does well.
I just think that, like, it feels like kind of a worse version of Jund. I think it's very similar in its matchups and lines up a little bit worse most of the time to me.
Yeah, I usually would agree with that. I think that the Delver version isn't like that, though, right? Like,
well, right, and I think that maybe this deck, he has found an interesting middle ground where it's sort of both. In, like, in game ones, he can be Delver, but in their matchups, he doesn't have to be, where, like, Delver or Jund doesn't have that gear that
I see.
Grixis Delver does.
I gotcha.
So I think that this deck is interesting, where he's playing almost a transformational deck.
I do think that Grixis Delver players at large have become Grixis Delver players. And I actually think that they're good with the deck. Like Corey Turan, for example, loves this deck in Modern, and I think he's very good with it. And that's a not nothing, right? To be good with a deck, and that's one of the benefits of Modern, right, is that if you are good with a deck and it's that deck's weak, you're going to have a good week.
Very true.
So.
You're well said.
Jeskai Control comes in next with 7 points. Man, this deck is hit or miss with some people. Some people think this deck is real good, and some people think this deck is real bad.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing this deck forever, just mostly as a labor of love. I've never thought that it was, like, a great deck. This Nahiri thing is interesting. I think that it does give the deck a different gear.
I like that because you're playing Nahiri, you don't hate your life as much for playing Ancestral Vision.
I think the Ancestral Vision is just great, and, like, you're definitely starting with that. I think that Nahiri gives the deck a different angle of attack, where you don't need to.
I think that Emrakul, Ancestral Vision, and Nahiri are the three best friends that anyone could have. And because, like, Emrakul, so Emrakul, when you discard Emrakul with Nahiri, it shovels back into your deck, and you're continuing to plus to get to that Emrakul anyway. If you draw extra Ancestral Visions late in the game that you need to turn into something else, you can discard them to Nahiri, right? And Ancestral Visions by itself is super powerful, but top deck them sucks, so Nahiri helps with that. And, like, I don't know. I think that they're a great trio. I love it.
I think that every time I've ever played this version of this deck, that Nahiri would have been better as a Jani Vengeant approximately 95% of the time. I think that this is kind of cute.
I don't know. I think that it kills more things than I thought it would a lot of the time.
Yeah, it does kill things. It feels like kill a creature, gain 2 life a lot, which I don't know is...
Which isn't quite as good as kill a creature, gain 3.
Right. And I think that their ultimates are comparable, and I think that Ajani's plus is better.
I do think that you get more out of Ancestral Visions with Nahiri than you would, so I think that might be the tipping point for me, but I can see what you're saying. I think that they're very... I mean, 4 Nahiri is also a lot of Nahiri, right?
Right. Like, I would never have played 4 Ashani Vengeant.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. This deck also plays some more fun-ofs, right? Like, Look at the one timely reinforcements, one anger of the gods, one Vindilin click, one Emrakul. Like, yeah.
I also saw this player get crazy punished for having less than 15 total mana sources in his deck by choosing to play the 9th fetch land over the 15th actual land. So, something to keep in mind.
Oh, yeah, there was a podcast that talked about that, and I was also thinking to myself, there's no way you could ever catch me not playing 15 sources with a 15 drop in my deck.
Right. It's just, it's foolhardy, right?
Yeah, I think Jim Davis is playing the exact same... Oh, no, he's not.
What in the world is Sacred Mage? That has to be a typo.
It's a time-shifted enchantment.
Yeah, so that's a card that doesn't do anything, and he's only playing 22 lands, so that's got to be like another Arid Mesa, right?
Sure.
There's no way he's actually playing Sacred Mesa.
Okay. I think it's time-shifted.
Well, it's not so... It's not my concern. Because the card doesn't do anything.
It is time-shifted.
Okay, so it costs 3 mana at the beginning of your upkeep. Sacrifice it unless you sacrifice a Pegasus. And also, you can pay 2 mana to put a 1/1 white Pegasus token with flying into play.
Hashtag cube.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah, there's no way he's playing this card. I'm not buying it. And if he did, I hope that it got Viridian Corrupted all the time.
Yeah, I Jim Davis, I saw playing this deck very well. I don't know. I can't decide who's right in this argument because I think that there's a line drawn in the sand with this deck, with how people feel about it. I think people either think that the combo is terrible or the combo is the greatest thing that ever happened to control decks.
I think it's so bad. I understand the point of view that it's good because when you're doing it, you're really doing it.
I think,
but I feel like I've mulliganed so much more since trying to play this nonsense.
There's
in
no
my
way
deck.
That the math doesn't say that, right?
I mean, adding 5 terrible cards to your deck doesn't make you mulligan more.
But you just said that it's comparable with a Johnny Vengeance. That card's not terrible.
But like you'd only ever play 2 of them, right? So like in a Johnny Vengeance, like
that's true.
The double a Johnny Vengeance hand was never good.
That's true.
Where like you're way more likely to have the double Nahiri, or like any hand with an Emrakul in it is an automatic mulligan, whether you actually take the mulligan or you just have the Emrakul.
That's true. I don't know. I'm a fan. I probably haven't played it as much as you, but I'm not sure. I think that it fits. I think that this is Quentin's dream.
Yeah, Matt's crazy about it, too.
That seems like something Matt would love, too.
I just can't get behind it.
All right. Well, we have thoughts on this deck in the form. I think that the deck Jessica Control is a staple of Modern. Like, I think that the color combination itself will be in Modern forever. I think that it draws really good players to it, and they just are trying to figure out how to build this deck right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Jeskai Control has always been around, despite never really being the best deck, right? Or even, like nobody ever really thought that. But certain players just want to play it.
Yeah.
It casts the perfect net in a lot of people's eyes as far as what threats and answers that it's capable of having. And, you know, Sean McLaren was able to...
Win a Pro Tour and a GP?
Yeah.
In back-to-back weeks or back-to-back months?
I don't know.
It was the next Modern GP, if I'm not mistaken. It was not weeks, but like the next, the Modern GP after the Modern. After. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fan of the archetype in general. I don't know how I feel about the combo, but I love the fact that people play this deck. I think that it's good for the format. And I love Lightning Bolt, so. And Snapcaster Mage. Like, who doesn't love those
cards?
This
deck plays like 200 Lightning Bolts.
Yeah. Infect comes in with 9 points. This deck is just a staple of Modern at this point. I think that it is the new combo deck. Like this is the one you gotta beat. It does bring Jund higher up. Like as Infect has become the combo deck, Jund has risen.
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever been a combo deck in Modern that Jund wasn't a pretty big favorite against, though. So like just because
I mean that's not true, right? Like Jund can't beat Scapeshift, but that's a control deck. Jund can't beat Ad Nauseam. Jund can't beat.
Is that true?
I've been told by Ad Nauseam players that they feel like Jund is rough for them, but I can tell you from the Jund side that it feels bad. Like you want to get into a top deck war with somebody that you can win with Jund, and I don't think you win the top deck war against Ad Nauseam.
Well, kind of. I mean, you have like their most common because like they usually need help to survive long enough, and like Tarmogoyf does a long way to put pressure on.
Yeah, those so, are like, the hand, those are the games that you win. The games that you win are your discard into Tarmogoyf games.
Right, and then you have Abrupt Decays for the, what's it called, the enchantment.
Yeah.
So they have so to have exactly Angel's Grace.
So hopefully they don't have the Angel's Grace. But you also have to have exactly Abrupt Decay, right?
Or Maelstrom Pulse.
Well, not really, because they can just pay, they can just Lotus Bloom, play it,
sure,
kill
but
you,
like,
right?
When they actually have all of that going on, like, that's usually pretty late in the game, and your Tarmogoyf and Scavenging Ooze has killed them by then, right?
Hopefully.
So, that's what I'm saying, like, if you can put pressure on to actually force them to have turn 5 combo or whatever, like, they don't have it very often.
No, I don't think that it's... I don't think that Jund has an unwinnable matchup in Modern, other than... Even Tron is not unwinnable, right?
Yeah, it's just
I beat Tron twice at a Modern GP. It's just a bad matchup for you. But I think that Tron and Ad Nauseam are bad matchups for you.
Sure, Tron is definitely a bad matchup. Ad Nauseam, I don't know. I am not.
But we're not talking about this. We're talking about Infect. And Infect is great. Infect is. It honestly, like, Become Immense, I think, was the best thing that happened to Modern in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it gave this deck a real, like, you can top deck one card and get there instead of needing a chain of cards.
It made players have to, like, it put players on notice, and that's good. That's a good thing to have in a format, right? You know, people, you'll sometimes see comments about Legacy and Vintage that, like, oh, I saw somebody win on turn zero once, that format's unplayable. And you're like, yeah, so you've never watched a game of Vintage, like... That's not how this format works at all.
Right, because everybody's playing Force of Wills, and like...
Yeah, it's the same thing in Legacy. It's like, oh, it's a turn one format. It's like, no.
Right, like, you have
to
be... It's
a turn 12 format.
You have to be able to interact by turn two in Legacy, and yeah, turn one in Vintage.
It's like a chump check, right? Like, you have to... You're put on notice when somebody plays a Line's Eye Diamond. You're like, oh, well, we got things to think about now.
Either I done goofed, or... This is fine.
Yeah. It was an interesting Twitter conversation this week that I was part of that was talking about the banning of Blood Moon in Modern. And my stance is, you're whiners. Like, they're like, oh, no, they shouldn't be able to play a card on turn three and win the game. And I'm like, well, they wouldn't have that capability if you played a stable mana base.
Right. And it is interesting with Blood Moon, because I think that it's not necessarily good for the health of the format, but it is here, right? And it's not oppressive.
I think it is good for the health of the format. I completely disagree with you.
Really?
When you look at Legacy, the beauty of Legacy is that it's auto-correcting, right?
Yeah, self-healing in a way.
It helps itself. When people get too greedy, people play Blood Moon. When people get too greedy, people play... Or when people get too not greedy, people play... You know,
Goblin Tar Belcher.
Yeah, Goblin Tar Belcher, or, you know, all of these stacks. And that's a thing that's beautiful. That puts the format in a place where when True Name Nemesis gets printed, people fix it. They fix it on their own. And if you take away the tools to fix formats on your own, you are left with a bad format.
And I do agree with that sentiment. I don't think that Blood Moon is quite in that camp. I think that it's mostly just leads to unfortunate games of Magic, where, like, nothing really happens. It's not, like... I think that it's fine. It's not oppressive. But I think that if Blood Moon were gone, I wouldn't shed a tear for it.
I would. And that's coming from somebody who plays decks... Well, I mean, also, because I win a lot of games with Scapeshift, because people play Blood Moon against me. And that feels great. It's like, well, thanks for discarding a card for 3 mana there, buddy. But other than that, like... I think that in a format where people, like, in Legacy, where people know what they're doing, I think that cards like that are good.
Sure. When, like, Legacy...
And I think Infect does that same thing, right? Infect is that put you on notice deck. I mean, we can't have Storm in Modern because they won't give us things to combat it, right?
Right. Or, it's basically Mind Break Traps and nothing.
Yeah. So, like, they can't give... Like, I don't know. Would Legacy be better with Force of Will? Or would Modern be better with Force of Will? I don't know. But we can't have Storm, and we need something. And before, they kept us honest with things like, you know, Splinter Twin.
Right. Splinter Twin was the police because it, you know, it was the turn 4 combo that was able to play an interactive game against other combo decks to keep the other combo decks from really running wild. It watched the yard, and... It was, you know...
Yeah, it was the Night's Watch, right? Like, they're up north, we don't really care about them in the long run, but they do keep the White Walkers from coming in and killing all of us. And that's an important job to have.
Somebody has to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that Infect fills this role of like, no, you don't get to do that.
No, you don't play Ad Nauseam. That's not part of it. That's not part of the game.
But I think that Infect fills that role, and I think it does it in a great way. I think that Modern also is at a point where it has things that are really good against the deck, right? Like you have things like Colgan's Command and Electrolyze that are really good against Infect and let the fair decks play a fair game and still beat the deck, but Infect tells the combo decks to go right out of here.
Right. It's a little bit faster, a little bit more consistent, and is able to play a little bit of disruption, which helps it beat the pants off of most of the other combo decks.
So, coming with 11 points, we do have Jund. I do believe this is the best deck in Modern right now. It's probably just the best deck in Modern ever, but...
Probably over time, for sure. Other than, I think the only real argument would be Splinter and Twin, right?
Or Eldrazi, right? If you're saying, like...
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, if we're, like, talking about decks that only existed for 5 minutes, like... I don't know. Even in the format was most degenerate, though, the Pro Tour was won by Splinter Twin, so who knows?
That's true. But Splinter Twin does have a good argument.
Yeah, this deck is good. It actually did a lot of its work in the top 32s.
This deck can't be banned out of the format, though, which is something, right? Like, they'd have to literally ban Tarmogoyf, Thoughtseize, Lightning Bolt, right, to keep this deck down.
Yeah, I mean, probably any one of those is enough at this point, right?
Maybe.
I mean, like...
If they banned Lightning Bolt, I don't think that the format would survive.
Yeah, I don't. It would just be weird. It would be, in fact, would get real good.
I don't think they could ban Lightning Bolt.
Without Tarmogoyf, I think that this deck is probably not very good.
Yeah, if they ban Lightning Bolt, people play a lot of junk.
Right.
If they ban Tarmogoyf, people play a lot of Tassadar.
But that's a lot of Tassadar.
Yeah, I think that Jund is a thing of beauty in Modern. I think that it's kind of like the thing that exists in Legacy with Shardless, right? Like, it's just a good deck, right?
Yeah, every card in the deck is very reasonable. They build equity over time. Tarmogoyf is the card that puts you on notice, has enough disruption to keep everything else in line. Scavenging Ooze, you know, helps against the graveyard combo decks. Liliana helps against control decks. Manlands help against control decks. You have enough removal to, you know, not get the snot beaten out of you. Like, the deck is just very well-rounded. It can line up pretty well in every matchup. And it's something that you have to be able to beat in order to be successful in Modern.
So what would you play right now in white, Casey?
Depends on, you know, my mood that day or what kind of tournament I was playing in, because I'm always very indecisive in Modern. I would probably lean towards Jeskai Control, because obviously I love it. I don't know if I could actually bring myself to play Nahiri, but I would be willing to test it out. If I had a Modern GP coming up or the Modern PPTQ season coming up, I would definitely want to test it a lot more before I really nailed down that decision.
I think that I would either play Jund or Scapeshift still. I think, and this has changed my decision. This is the first week since Eldrazi's gone that Scapeshift is not in our top five. So that's interesting.
I don't think I saw it at all when I was...
Yeah, I didn't see it at all on camera either, so...
Everybody knows something that we don't.
I don't know. But I do love both of those decks quite a bit. I think that you probably couldn't get me to play Jeskai right now, but... I don't know. Maybe you could. I don't know. Well, let's move on to our training rounds. Every week on the podcast, we're going to talk about something that gets you better at Magic or life in general. And this week, we want to talk about the pros and cons of getting comfortable. So, getting comfortable, in the sense that we're talking about, is that moment in Magic where you're sitting down and you're spell slinging and you're cozy. You got your water. You got your can full of magical cards and you're feeling good. It's like this kind of like being in the zone a little bit, but like not actually in the zone, but like the zone of friendliness, contentness that you're playing Magic. And Casey, how often do you think you feel comfortable in a match of Magic?
as infrequently as possible. I feel like when I start to feel that way, I start to lose. So I usually try not to get that settled in into a match of Magic. But, you know, sometimes it does happen, especially when I'm playing against somebody that I've known for a long time. You know, a lot of the players around here I play against all the time, I'm pretty friendly with, or, you know, actually pretty good friends with. And it can happen, but, you know, I try to avoid it as much as I can.
Sure. So, what are the benefits that you might have to feeling comfortable? One of them is that you're more relaxed. That could be a good thing.
Yeah, for some people it is. I can only play Magic when I'm super focused. So when I'm that relaxed, have a hard time.
What do you think the benefits are to feeling comfortable? Like, if you had to say what others might have them or what I might have them or anyone, what are the benefits that you could see in that situation?
Well, some people stress themselves out, right? So, like, the tensity of the moment affects them in a much more negative way, where being relaxed actually helps them think clearly.
Yeah, I think that for me, I need to have... I like feeling ready for battle. Like, yeah. I don't like... I'm fine, like, being friendly with... I mean, I'm friendly with all of my opponents, right? But I definitely am not, like... After a match of Magic, I always feel like a weight is lifted off my shoulders, right? And I think that that's a good thing for me. I think that there are, the pros to it are, like, when you're comfortable and you're cozy, you do... you have less stressors in your life at that point, like, stressors in that moment. And that can definitely be a good thing. So... Is there a line that we should draw in the sand on how comfortable we should allow ourselves to be in a match of Magic if we want to win that match?
I think it really just depends on your personality.
That's my thought. I think it depends on you, right?
Where, like, if you look at great players, like Patrick Chapin, every match of Magic he's ever played, he looks like a wild-eyed psychopath. He's, like, super, super intense. Where Reed Duke is, like, super casual and charming with everybody that he plays against and, you know, is able to... just relax and have fun with it. And those are both great Magic players with totally different approaches.
I think that for a lot of players, the stress freaks them out. That it's a real problem for them. And I don't think that it has to be. You can use that. Like, it's kind of like watching Michael Jordan play basketball. Or even watching Steph Curry a little bit. Like, that might be more relatable for a lot of our listeners right now.
Russell Westbrook, I think, is probably the best example in the NBA.
Right, but I don't think that people watch Russell Westbrook the way that you and I do.
Sure.
But I think that Curry has those moments, right? When he, like, is coming up half court, right? And there's a guy 10 feet away from him, and he's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
This is my spot. You didn't even guard me. And he shoots the ball 3 feet past half court, and you're like, what? That wasn't guardable. And I think that Russell Westbrook probably is the best example, right? Where he sees something that we don't see, and he also loves the fact that he loves the fact that Katie's better than him. Like, he loves it because he doesn't think it.
Right.
He's wrong.
He wants to prove you wrong on every single play,
which is weird because they've got to be pretty good friends at this point.
Yeah, I think they're best friends.
Yeah,
I think that they have sleepovers at each other's house,
slumber parties, but. I think that having that feeling is, I think that it works for some people and it doesn't work for others. I think that, like, for example, when LeBron James tried to be that, he was real bad at basketball.
Yeah. He doesn't have that here.
He was like, I need to be a villain. And it's like, no, you don't. You don't need to be that. That's not what you need to be.
Yeah,
you need to be best buds with that guy. And it depends on you, right? For Michael, he would eat your ear off. If he was going to win him a game of basketball.
Right. Or if it just looked tempting, right? He was just intense.
I think John Finkel's that way. Like, I think if John Finkel saw a moment to, like, slaughter your family and... Obviously, I'm joking, but, like...
Kind of.
But I think that that's... It's, like, this killer instinct that I think that some Magic players have. I think Paulo has it. I think John has it. I think Owen has it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't know anything about Seth Manfield, but he's not the same person playing Magic as when he's not playing Magic, so right. He probably has it.
Yeah, he's got something.
And that's okay. That's not the feeling. Like, Owen Turtwald has never been comfortable in a game of Magic that I've ever watched him play.
Right. He looks actually like...
But I think that LSV... LSV is more like me, where it's like... He's not comfortable, but real friendly. Right? And then there's people like you said, like Reed Duke. They're pretty comfortable.
Yeah. Aaron Muranaka.
Aaron Muranaka is a great example. He is... Pro Tour Top 8 competitor from Utah.
He is so comfortable that he gets me feeling comfortable, which makes me lose to him.
Yeah.
It's part of the strategy.
Yeah. Mike Callahan, the same way.
Yeah, I think I've played against Callahan so many times at Oasis that I no longer fall for it with him.
But I think that there's pros to it and there's cons to it. I think that one of the big pros is you're comfortable. Like, that's a good feeling to have. And I think that your opponent is more likely to change themselves when you're comfortable. I think if you're comfortable, your opponent's more likely to get comfortable. So that's a benefit to you.
Right. And if you can get comfortable being comfortable, which is weird, but like if you can get where you can actually play good Magic when you're that relaxed.
And I'm not that way.
I'm not either. But if you can be, it's a huge asset. It's like...
Do we sound like raving lunatics right now?
Probably. But I'm serious.
I know what I'm saying.
Right. And I think we're both... I don't know that it's coming across, but basically what I'm trying to say is if you can be this like relaxed, hang loose type of Magic player and play good Magic doing that, it will benefit you because you'll drag your opponent down to that level of relaxation and they won't know how to handle themselves.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there are players that we watch that are such different people when they play Magic than when they don't. And I think that this is one of the reasons. And I think that a lot of players feel like they have to have this cutthroat attacking attitude all the time to play Magic. And then there's players that don't have that attitude at all, right? Like,
yeah,
that are really good Magic players.
Right. And yeah, I don't think that either one of those things is a requirement or a hindrance to being a good Magic player. It's about finding your own groove, the kind of person you are. If you are a very serious, no-nonsense person, then and you try to like make jokes to lighten up the game of Magic,
it's not going to work. If you get too comfortable, you might not block a wolf, and that could cost you a lot.
Exactly. You have to be really focused.
He was so nice to come on, and now back-to-back episodes, three throws some shade.
Yeah, I mean, that one felt planned though. But yeah, he's great. I mean, obviously John Finkel is great. You know, sometimes
and the nicest guy.
Yeah, for sure.
The guy has no faults at all.
Right.
And wait, that is right?
Well, one glaring fault.
All right.
And then the wolves thing.
Okay. I almost got you there.
Yeah, I sometimes forget that he is
fell to the dark side.
Villain. Yeah.
I think that for a lot of people, something that's important to note is like, are you better at Magic in those moments? Are you Casey? Like, let's say you're not Casey. Like, let's talk about. I think that Manny probably falls under that category that he does play better Magic when he's comfortable.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he can turn himself into a ball of nerves, and when he's stressed out, it really reflects in how he plays, where if he's just laughing and joking, like, you know, he's much better at Magic.
Yeah, and I think that that is, that knowing that about yourself is going to help you improve, right? Because it lets you know the steps that you need to take to get to make that next adjustment, right? And that's a good thing to know about yourself. That's a bit of self-evaluation that you might not know that you need to make. Like, for me, sometimes I would get too stressed and I would go to the bathroom and just like put water into my hair and like talk to myself in the mirror and put myself up. Like legitimately, like literally go into the bathroom at the tournament site and talk to myself. And, you know, different strokes for different folks. That works for me. It makes me better when I do that.
Yeah, and you have to find to get into your own rhythm. Well, whether it's the way that you shuffle your cards, if you try to do it differently, things like that, it can throw off your whole game of Magic, and like you don't ever feel right, you never feel even remotely comfortable.
I think
it affects your play.
I think that LeBron and Michael might be, and Magic too. I think that Magic was super comfortable playing basketball, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was always kind of the life of the party, right? Like,
yeah, he would be crushing you, but you'd be smiling with him, right?
Right. He'd help you up, give you a good game, you know, where like...
And LeBron's that way, too. But like, Kobe, Michael,
They will push you down.
They would be like, don't get up. I didn't tell you you could get up. And that is a different feeling, right? When you think about, I think that this actually falls into football, like offensive and defensive players, they have very different mindsets, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, you have to like actually be kind of a vicious person to play defensive line, right? Like,
yeah. You, like, and offensive line, right? You have to want to be.
Yeah, you have to have a mean streak.
You have to want to be pushed, like.
Yeah.
Your job is literally to knock some dude over.
Right.
500 times.
Yeah, in a row.
Yeah. And that's a weird job to have. And I think that there are people that, like, you think hear people all the time, but he looks comfortable in the pocket, right? I don't know that Tom Brady has ever once looked comfortable in the pocket, ever.
Or anywhere else.
Yeah. Guy just is very uncomfortable. Peyton Manning, however, you know, despite my hatred and your hatred of the guy, he's pretty comfortable slinging that football. And when he's not, he plays real bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very rattleable.
It's but actually, like, the opposite of his brother, right? Because I don't think that, I don't think Eli has ever looked comfortable in doing anything in his life either.
Right. Least of all playing football.
And I think that Magic players can have that same feeling. And I think knowing
his forehead to chin ratio, the helmet doesn't fit him right.
I think that Magic players need to find that balance for themselves. They need to, like, there are pros and cons for it, but it's not about what's the pros and cons for what Casey has, or the pros and cons for me, the pros and cons for Michael, the pros and cons for John Finkel, or for Paulo, or for Owen, or for your, you know, your friend that goes to FM with you. You can have a different play style, a different way that makes you comfortable to play your best. I don't think that LeBron is a worse basketball player because he doesn't have that killer instinct. I think he's a different basketball player. I think that what made Michael a great winner was that, right?
Yeah, because he just wanted to win at everything.
Right.
I feel like Michael Jordan is the kind of person that would race you to the elevator, and you wouldn't know you were racing.
That's probably true.
I think that Kai Boutte has that also.
Like, you think so?
I think so.
Okay.
But there are...
All the stories I hear about John Finkel make me think of Michael a lot of the time. Like being, like getting a glass of scotch and challenging Owen to battles in the house. Yeah. Like, I'm going to beat you drunk. You can't stop me. And I think that that is a thing of beauty. I think that those stories that Chapin tells on top level podcast about John, like literally getting drunk and then challenging Owen Turnwall to matches of Magic in the house to say, Owen, you're still youngin', you can't beat me. I think that that is... That is the level of comfort that John wants, right? But does that make him better? I mean, he is better at Magic than LSV. But, like, is that what makes him better at Magic? Probably, or if LSV had that, would LSV be better at Magic? Because probably not, right?
No, I think the fact that LSV is, like, kind of a goofball is what allows him to...
And he does dial it back when he plays, if you watch him.
He doesn't have nearly the same flourish. But, like, after he finishes the match... Then it's like a switch flipped.
Yeah, but Reed, for example, is very cordial, very polite, and I don't think that Reed would be better at Magic if he wasn't like that.
Right. Yeah, Reed Duke will even do like the silly things that we do in playtesting. Like if you're at one life and going to lose, you sack a fetch land, you know, just so you go out on your own terms. Reed Duke is like the only pro Magic player I've ever seen do that, and he does it all the time just because he's out there trying to have fun.
I think that at the end of the day, your job after you listen to this podcast is kind of to figure out, am I playing badly because I'm too stressed? Am I not comfortable enough? Am I playing badly because I'm just way too close with these people and we're not like, and I, if my goal is to win, do I need to like be like, hey, like when we're in a match of Magic, we're in a match of Magic.
Right. And you have to really like think about who you are just as a person too, and as a player. Like you'll see different things from different people in terms of how they dress for the tournament, how they eat for the tournament, how they prepare. You know, there are certain people who want to look good, so they feel good, so they play good, so they'll dress up a little bit for Magic tournaments. There are some people who wear tank tops and flip-flops. And
That's me, bro. I'm flip-flops. Actually, that's not true. Actually, when I go to a PTQ, I actually specifically wear my running shoes. Like, if I'm going to a big event, I will wear running shoes because your feet hurt at a GP if you're wearing flip-flops all day. So for me, like, I want to be comfortable but not to hurt. So.
Right. But, like, some people you'll see, like, wearing a suit to a Magic tournament.
That's true.
Just because that helps them.
Roberto Gonzalez wears that bow tie.
Right.
Or day.
Right. Because, and I think it's because it helps him feel confident.
It makes him feel back and ready to attack, bro.
Exactly. And so you just have to ask yourself if you're a flip-flop person or a bow-tie person.
And I don't think there's a wrong answer, right?
No, not at all.
There are people that have won Pro Tours wearing suits, and there are people that should not have shown up to the Pro Tour. I mean, they don't let you do that anymore, right? Like, you have to wear
clothes.
Yeah, clothes to a top eight of a Pro Tour at this point. But there are people that are that are way more comfortable in different settings and way less comfortable in different settings. And it's your job to figure out where you're at on that spectrum and to play your best Magic. I can tell you what is right for me. Casey can tell you what's right for him, but that doesn't mean it's going to be right for you.
Yeah, you...
This one's not a hard, fast rule.
Right. This is get better by knowing yourself.
Yep.
That's it.
Awesome. Don't forget to check out the clan on MTGO by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. You can also check out our sponsor to Oasis Games as well as Five Color Combo. They are both great places to buy Magic cards, tokens, and they have the best drafting app on the web. So check it out. Don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. You can get, tons of sweet benefits, card of the week. If you're a $10 or more patron, you get all the prizes from any show that we do. And we really appreciate it. It means a lot to us. So thank you so much. And you get an extra podcast every month.
Yeah.
And that's
lots of perks. It's a classic win-win scenario.
Yeah. We win, you win, Dev loses or wins.
Yeah. It's relative.
All right. Hashtag. Oh, where can people find you?
Facebook at @KCTunaBloodworth or on Twitter at @CCBloodthirst.
All right. You're going to have to read all these.
There's only one.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
What does it say?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me. I just know there's only one. I can't remember the guy's name. Is it okay to have ramen 2 days in a row? It's not great. I would discourage it.
Wait, what?
I'll find it.
Is it? All right, it's from Tom.
Tom Donkin.
He follows me, so he must be a Magic player. He says, is it okay to have ramen 2 nights in a row? Hashtag would it be good? Hashtag healthy eats. Hashtag life choices. Hashtag fitness journey. Isn't that just mono carbs?
I think it's mono salt and carbs, yeah. It's a lot of salt. Like, it's fine as far as carbs go, unless you're, like, specifically carb cutting, in which case it's straight carbs. It's a lot of salt. So if you're going to make ramen a staple of your diet, I would try to avoid salt in other places. Because, it'll kill you.
All right. There you go. ramen's delicious.
It is. So,
I think I like cup of noodles better, but that's because I'm lazy.
Sure. And I think that you and I are both, at a point where we're old enough that, ramen isn't, a need. Like, where when you're very young and starting out in life, you eat ramen because it's affordable. Where now we eat ramen because out of laziness.
Yeah. I mean, I used to like cup of noodles a lot.
Sure.
It was super cheap. But, I'd rather just throw some chicken or pork chop on the grill.
Right, because, that's a luxury that we can,
That's true.
It's just different. It depends on where you are in your life. If you're a college student, I like ramen, too, but
And I don't know if there's a problem having it 2 nights in a row, if that's what you want to do with your life.
No, but it's a lot. It's the 3 days in a row... If you have other options, it's too many.
Aren't there people who, start companies, that just eat ramen all the time to,
Yeah, we're college students. You can live on it.
Sure.
But if your goal is to be hashtag healthy eats.
No, then no.
Then ramen noodles probably shouldn't be a part of your diet, but it's fine to have them on occasion, I would say.
Yeah, everything's fine in moderation. So.
Great.
And now we're talking health, so... I'm not qualified to talk about that, as I got some moobs going on, but...
Yeah, me neither. We need to get Quentin on for this.
Quentin will be on in a few weeks. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you all next week. Oh,
magic, magic, magic.